Any other comments? Would the committee feel comfortable having the gentleman go to legislative council and providing us with amendments to the bill, to section 3 of the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would be willing to look at those. I am going to ask at least one constituent of mine, maybe more than one, who are members of the structural engineers but who do not like this legislation or this kind of legislation, about the amendments, to see if they have a comfort level. And if they're still uncomfortable, I won't be able to support it.
I'll be happy to look at them again.
Why don't you go down to try and get amendments drafted?
So then, Mr. Chair, if I may clarify, then we would not consider the bill again this afternoon because the members would like an opportunity to look at them more extensively.
Okay. Close the hearing on the bill, or the work session on the bill. And what is our next bill?
It's your bill, Mr. Chair. Yours.
Yeah. Senate Bill 548. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I might, a representative of the principal sponsoring group of the bill is in attendance and has offered to take the committee through the hand-engrossed bill that I'm going to be passing out right now.
Okay. Who is that? There we are.
Mr. Chair, as I recall when we heard this before, I had some sort of land use planning related concerns. I guess I'd like to ask Senator Springer to let me know his concerns about the amendment.
Okay. Is that an invitation to me, or are we going to hear from somebody first?
Your choice.
I don't know if I've had a chance to review, well, I know I haven't had a chance to review this whole package. I guess members may recall that our last hearing, I think it was Senator Smith and I, who, in conjunction with other members, Senator Cease had questions about the impact of some of these changes on the process by which local government is faced with decisions regarding partitions. And a big part of the discussion, I guess, focused on the change in the definitions as it applies to the earnest money contract and the impact of that upon individuals who are parties to such an agreement, and subsequently to any land use decisions that may be pending. I've had a chance to visit with one of the parties that I guess is identified as a proponent with the changes that are recommended, but I'm still not persuaded that this is a good step for the reasons that I think Senator Smith and I and others stated earlier. So if this is still part of the package, this bill's not something I can support.
I'd like to hear what your thing envisions at this point, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Obviously, it's been changed quite a bit. Somebody summarize it for me, at least.
Mr. Chair, if I just might preface this, the hand-engrossed bill that you have represents a hand-engrossing of the -7 amendments. There are separate amendments that are the -6 amendments that deal with a totally separate policy issue involving when in the process a realtor or other person may establish some type of agreement with a potential buyer of land that has not yet been partitioned. That is a totally separate policy issue, and we've tried to keep that separate because it is not an issue that the parties involved in the bill have been able to agree upon. And so we're still going to take that particular issue up separately.
So, Mr. Chair, That's the dash six amendment question that we were all concerned about, okay?
Why don't you please give us your version of the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Pearson. I'm Washington County Surveyor. I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Engineers and Surveyors. As indicated, we've heard this bill before, and Senator Cease and the members of the committee requested that we have a hand-engrossed version of this, and John has taken care of that, and I've gone through the bill. I'll take you through it page at a time, and if I'm being too detailed, let me know, and I'll be less detailed, and if there are questions, I'd be happy to take those at any time. Most of the information in this dash 7 hand-engrossed bill has been presented to the committee prior, so I will try and be as brief as possible and highlight the major changes that have occurred since the public hearing. On page 1, there's new definitions for declarant and declaration. These are technical matters that have to do with information that's on the plat and who signs the partition and subdivision plats. In 1989, you'll note under definition of partition land in lines 26 through 28, there was an exemption to public bodies for from the partitioning process when they acquire right-of-way for roads through property. In some cities and counties, they were required to actually partition a piece of property to acquire an additional 5 feet of right-of-way. This exemption in lines 26 through 28 was granted. To further strengthen that exemption, the lines noted as 28A, B, and C have been added, which indicates that if property is separated or divided in two physically by a road, that it does not serve to partition or subdivide the property, that it will still be considered as one parcel of property until such time as the proper planning procedures have been complied with. The primary logic for that is that the underlying fee title to the property within the roadbed is still vested in the original owners, then the public only has a right of an easement across the road portion of it. On page 2, or the second page, there's a new definition for property line and a new definition for property line adjustment. This in the past has been referred to as lot line adjustments, but lots are statutorily defined as parcels or units of land created by subdivision and doesn't address partition lines, adjustments, and partition property, and just regular acreage property. On page 2A is a new section that deals with the new definition of declarant and declaration. The declaration on a subdivision or partition plat is where the owner says basically that I own the property, that I am doing this act, I'm either subdividing or partitioning it, and I'm doing this of my own free will. It's a notarized statement on there, and it's appeared on every subdivision plat since I've ever seen them in Oregon, which goes back to at least 1848. They've called them different things. They're most commonly termed a dedication, but people object to the term dedication if there is no public dedication of roads, and they call it something else. So this just standardizes it on a statewide basis and says it's to be known as a declaration from now on. This also provides if the declarant who signs the plat is not the fee owner of the property, and this is in section 2 or sub 2 of section 3, the fee owner and the vendor of any interest under any instrument of sale shall also execute the declaration. If in sub 3, if there's a mortgage or a trust deed, it also requires the mortgage holder or trust deed holder to sign the plat. Sub 4 provides for the filing of an affidavit that would be recorded simultaneously with the subdivision or partition plat to the consenting of the partitioning or subdividing by, say, a mortgage holder. For instance, a bank may not want to actually sign the physical plat. They could sign an affidavit and record that affidavit together with the subdivision plat. that information would be noted on the subdivision plat so it could be cross-referenced. The reason for this, having these other people sign it, is there have been cases in Oregon where subdivisions have been recorded, only signed by the contract holder, not by the fee title holder or mortgage holder. There's been, the property has been taken back through default of mortgage or something like that, and the person that took it back or the agency told, in this case, Jackson County, that there was no dedication of the property because I did not sign the plat, or my agency, being the bank or the trust agency, did not sign the plat. So this would require that anybody that has an interest in property agree to do with that property what is being done by that partition plat. It just gets everybody on record. On page 3, there's some housekeeping language down in line 26 and 27. There's some new language that has been added as a result of a meeting with that included Dale Blanton of DLCD. Mr. Blanton has submitted additional language to be substituted in lieu of this language here and in one other location. I reviewed that language, and we have no problem with that. I don't know, John, if you distributed that or not.
I believe we distributed it at the last meeting. A sheet like this with Department of Land Conservation and Development across the top, recommended language change to the dash 4 amendments.
We've reviewed that language proposed by Mr. Blanton, and as I've said, we've got no problem with that. It's a land use issue, and it's not a surveying or actual technical subdivision or partitioning issue. On page 4 of the bill, in lines 23 through 25, after water right, the remainder of that sentence has been deleted. The question was asked at the last work session, I believe, if the Water Resources Department had been notified. And I can't remember if it was at the last work session or at the public hearing.
Let me go back just a minute.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I think I'm looking at your... This isn't labeled, so I don't know. John, am I looking at... What I've got here and what he's going over is the same thing as the dash.
This is the current.
Okay. Now, and then I have a thing from the DLCD. It says recommended language change, and
It would be to this language.
Okay, so what you're telling me is, since this still reads the way they didn't want it, that it should read the other way instead, right?
Senator Otter, Senator Cease, based on the recommendation from DLCD, we would concur in that language change to the hand-engrossed bill. That's correct.
Okay, so...
So in the handing...
Go ahead.
In the hand-engrossed bill, we would strike, nothing in this subsection shall exempt a governing body from the requirements of ORS 92044 and 046, and insert the highlighted language on the amended sheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Back to...
But just to be sure, the other handwritten language in that would still remain the same. There's a lot of handwritten language on that page, on line 26 and 27. You're only striking that one sentence. You're leaving the rest of it.
That's correct. The sentence would still, picking it up on 26, waiving the requirement that parcels created in excess of 80 acres be shown on a partition plat.
Thank you.
On page 4, again, lines 23 through 25, after water right, on line 23, the remainder of that sentence has been deleted, and the question had been raised, had we contacted the Water Resources Department at the time the question had been raised. I had not. Since that time, I've had conversations with the Water Resources Department. They concur in this language, in the deletion of this. In fact, they probably may have wanted to have gone a little further, but at this point, we didn't have the time to do it. This set up a process, I believe, in 1989 that isn't really working well. The deletion would remove the requirement that the acknowledgement from the Water Resources Department that's required for a plat be recorded by the county recording officer. There's language that takes care of that issue a little later on in the bill. On page 5, line 32, originally we had proposed to delete 10 days and insert 14 days at the request of the planning staff in my county, and in subsequent conversations with other planning staff people, the 14 days seems to be more appropriate, so we're reinserting the 14 days and deleting the 10 days. Or deleting the 10 days. We're leaving it at 10 days.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a simple change. I don't know how I'm going to do the rest of it here. Page 6. Line 15, we're deleting the reference to blocks being lettered or numbered on subdivision plats. I testified earlier on that oftentimes you can end up with different phases of subdivisions where they eventually come around and they join back together. You can have two blocks that are in reality one block with different block numbers and similar lot numbers. This would just make it so that all subdivision lots would be numbered consecutively, period. There would never be a block number. We've been doing this in Washington County for at least 20 years, and it's been very successful.
If the recorder finds that there's two numbering systems that don't jive, does he have the authority to go ahead and not record?
Mr. Chair, if the recorder found something on the plat that was in conflict with the statutes, I would say he'd have every right to not record that until it did comply with the statutes. There's some housekeeping language on the remainder of page 6, which just deals with Federal Geodetic Control Committee guidelines and bearings and angles. Page 7, section 11, at the top of the page, this is one that was discussed at some length, and my testimony indicated that subdivision plats are tending to show more and more and more information that is subject to change, building envelopes, floodplain lines, just a variety of things. We had a Lane County plat that said that you couldn't paint your house anything but a particular color. The problem with showing that information on plats is as a city or county grants an administrative variance, the information shown on the plat is no longer valid, but that plat cannot be amended. It forever remains as it's platted, and this creates a real problem when somebody comes in later and says, gee, we really need to get that off the plat because I'm having trouble with the bank or the title company or whoever, and we smile and say, "That's sorry, there's just nothing that can be done." This would provide that no city or county shall require that a final subdivision, condominium, or partition plat show graphically on the final plat any information or requirement that is or may be subject to administrative change or variance. It would still allow them to show something or make reference to something in a note form. They could say that lots 10 through 20 are subject to solar restrictions, things of this nature. It would allow the information to be referenced, but just not shown graphically in the actual lot. Section 11, there's a change doing away with a 2-inch by 36-inch galvanized iron pipe for an initial point. Down in 32 and 33, those lines have been deleted. They aren't, it's archaic language that's not really an issue at this point. On page 8, lines 5 through 11 are new and basically says that when a property line is relocated between two common properties, that that property line, that new property line, be surveyed and that a and monumented and a survey filed with the county surveyor. The new Section 8 grants an exemption for property that is greater than 10 acres. That's was originally 80 acres, and we've talked to the county planning folks, and they feel they'd be more comfortable with 10 acres, and we have no problem with that. The 80 acres was just a number that we picked out and made sense to us from a surveying point of view, because 80 acres is part of a section, and the 10 acres would probably cover 95% of all property line adjustments that are being done in the state. The hand engrossed language there is the other portion that should be deleted, and the language from DLCD inserted at this point. That would take care of the two places where the DLCD has proposed to change their this language. This was put in at their request, and they came up with better language, and we have, again, as I said earlier, no problem with that. Page 9 is strictly housekeeping. Grammatics. Page 10, this is where we pick up the block numbers, which says on or after January 1, 1992, they shall not make reference to block numbers or letters unless the subdivision that is being recorded is a continued phase of a previously recorded subdivision of the same name that has used block numbers or letters in the past. So if somebody recorded Otto's Acres in Troutdale and did lots or blocks 1 through 4, and then they did Otto's Acres phase 2, they could pick up with lots 5, 6, and 7 and continue the same thing instead of trying to have a mixture of referencing. There's no changes.
What happens if I, on Otto Acres in Troutdale, I have the, they're large lots, and eventually those large lots are subdivided. Let's say Otto Acres lot 1A.
No, as lot 1 is further subdivided in a continued phase, if lot 1 is, say, 5 acres and then it's broken up into 5 1-acre lots, and the last lot number used was, say, 60, then they would pick up with 61, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Lot 1 would cease to exist as a matter of record. The replatting of a previously platted subdivision or partition serves to vacate that original plat or the portion of the plat that was done, so it just goes away. But there could be there, and there have been cases where there might be a portion left of lot 1, and you'd have to still maintain that reference. It'll still be in the original plat, but it just people won't sell property by that reference. Page 12, line 21, provides that the fees collected for subdivision plats may be established at a higher level than by statute, by resolution and order, deleting the requirement for ordinance. This is consistent with some other bills that have addressed this fee versus ordinance or resolution versus ordinance question, notably House Bill 2844, which I imagine will end up in this committee, dealing with fees for filing of surveys, and there's another House bill, I believe, that deals with the Public Land Corner Preservation Fund being set by ordinance. There's still notice types of things that have to go on, but in my 14 years as county surveyor, I've never had anybody attend or object to a fee increase by ordinance or by resolution or order. And this is just a much simpler, much less expensive way of doing something. Page 13, line 7, that's a change that was requested by the County Clerks Association, and we concurred in that. And lines 29 through 32, paragraph 5B in lines 30 through 32 is being deleted. And the language that I referred to earlier for the water rights would be picked up in what would be a statement of water rights noted on the subdivision plat or partition plat together with the water rights certificate number if applicable. And the Water Resources Department feels that that's more than adequate to take care of their needs. Page 14, there was one down in the middle of page 14 where it says line 22 and 23. It goes on, within 14 days of the mailing or other. There's four words that need to be added into that were not evidently, were cut off when John cut and pasted this together, and those are service of the notice.
Where are we?
I'm on page 14, where it says, any utility, right about in the middle, the larger print, any utility company that desires to maintain an easement. After, so it would read, any utility company that desires to maintain an easement subject to vacation under this section must notify the governing body in writing within 14 days of the mailing or other service of the notice. The question was raised either at the work session or at the public hearing how the utility companies feel about this. I've had no adverse reaction from any of the utility companies that I'm aware of that objects to this 14-day notice. Right now, all a city or county is required to do, and this is dealing with replats, where you vacate the underlying plat when you plat over it. At the present time, all that's required of a utility company is that we provide them with notice. There's no, we could provide them with notice one day and vacate it the next day. This provides them a 14-day period to respond to that notice in the event that they would like to maintain a utility easement within that vacated plat. 14A, 15 is minor, eliminating major and minor partition references. I believe pretty much the rest of it is just very minimal housekeeping. I might point out, on page 7, of the dash 7 amendments which are attached in line 2, we're again proposing to change the requirement that fees for the review and approval of condominium plats, instead of being set by ordinances, can in the future be set by resolution or order of the city or county. And with that, I believe that pretty much takes care of anything of any substance to this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? We have Genoa Ingram, and let's see, Dale
Quinn. They don't need to come up together, Mr. Chair.
They don't need to?
No, they don't need to come up together.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Genoa Ingram, Oregon Association of Realtors. The Oregon Association of Realtors was responsible for bringing to you the Dash 6 amendments, which would clarify current practice with respect to presenting earnest money agreements or writing earnest money agreements prior to tentative approval of the partition. I would like to point out to you a letter that I distributed to each member of the committee last week, which contains an attachment, a memorandum from our legal counsel, Mr. Ray Shaw, who did appear at the initial hearing. And wanted to point out that failure to adopt the Dash 6 amendments would not prohibit the practice of individuals entering into earnest money agreements prior to the tentative approval. However, it would clarify to what degree an individual could negotiate both in the cases of a subdivision and in a partition. And our objective here today and in entering the Dash or in introducing the Dash 6 amendments is not to change particularly the way that subdivisions are handled, because those are more complex. They do entail a great number of parcels, whereas if you look at a parcel, it's three and under. And so it's a matter of
ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
One of the major concerns, as I recall, was the need to maintain records. And unless I start surveying as of, well, I don't know if it's had an emergency clause, but next year sometime, or maybe July of this year if it does have an emergency clause, I'm still going to have to maintain the records for everything I did prior to this time. So how are we going to help them with that problem with this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Grensky, I understand that, and but the reverse, if the bill passes with the effective date, which is 90 days after the session, it does not have an emergency clause, then those surveys that were made 10 years ago, the world changes immediately, and you have no recourse at all.
But it still will require them to maintain their records.
That's correct, but we would change the world for the future. It's my feeling, Mr. Chairman, that the proponents who are here are in support of the amendment. I may be wrong.
What's the feeling in the committee?
Mr. Chair, I remain with a lot of reservations about the bill, amended or not.
Well, I don't think this the amendment, I don't think alleviates their main problem, which was the record keeping. I never heard anybody last time testify that their insurance rates were putting them out of business. In fact, very few of them had even had claims for this type of thing. So I think the records was their big concern. And I don't think that this is going to help them with that unless, again, you start tomorrow. So I guess I can't support it.
Is there a motion on the bill?
Move to table this bill, Mr. Chair.
Senator Springer moves to table Senate Bill 652. Call the roll, please.
Senator Benn, Senator Steve.
Aye.
Senator Grensky.
Aye.
Senator Kipcoffer, Senator Smith, Senator Springer.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Aye. That concludes the items on our agenda. Anything else to bring before the committee?
No.
We're adjourned.
Good work, Mr. Chair.
Good.